Okay, with our guest Michael Tesserian, and now here comes the controversy. So get ready on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you, Michael Tesserian. Michael, I think for all of us to get a better handle on the direction we're going tonight as we talk about Druids, some people are saying, who were the Druids? So why don't we start with that?
Exactly. Before I go on, George, a little bit later, can you remind me? I've got two important announcements to make if we get a bit of time to do that.
I will do that. I'll put that note down
Thank you.
Sure thing.
That's great. One of them includes you, an event that we'll be doing together later in Seattle in February.
Yes. So we definitely excellent.
Let the audiences know about that event. The Druids, I mean, incredible. This, like I say, this is the original elect. They not only contain the records of Atlantis, the ancient records, these individuals were in touch with it, but they also were the keepers of the Earth mysteries. These are, all our cities today are geomantically aligned. They're, positioned, the famous ley lines for people who heard about those. Not only these old megalithic sites, but modern cities are all aligned to constellations, aligned to mountains, and aligned to geomantic points, So this was part of their knowledge. One of the most important elements of Druid is, of course, the name, the word Druid, which basically, translates as servant of truth, but it's also the root of our word for door. So it comes from a word that's very close to our modern door, like doorway. And, of course, people know by looking at Stonehenge, a lot of those stones look like doorways. They look like portals physically. So the word is intriguing. It has a lot to do with keeper of wisdom or keeper of knowledge. It basically translates as, a servant of truth. And one of their greatest duties, really, because there's been so much written on the Druids, and there's so much rubbish also written about them. And one of the other reasons for writing this book is to sort of clear up a lot of the disinformation that's out there and really get to the heart of who these people were and what they were about and what they did. And, one of the ways to understand their work is to understand, just like a modern paramedic goes and treats, an accident victim, just like a doctor or a surgeon, we have to understand that that's who these guys were. But they were not interested so much in healing individuals. Their job, mysteriously enough, was to heal the earth. I mean, earlier we just talked about the Age of Catastrophe, the Age of Catastrophe that many authors in the past have written about, the great upheavals and cataclysms. Well, see, to these people's consciousness, to our ancient forefathers' mind, the earth was a goddess, a living entity.
Of course. It's the Gaia theory, isn't it?
Exactly. So when they see their mother being torn and ripped and rent, they're not just thinking, oh, well, that sucks. Where can I put my, new house or whatever? These guys are themselves traumatized because their mother, the earth itself, has been, abused, utterly destroyed, in a state of terrible, terrible upheaval. So one of the, and this is what needs to be brought out about the Druids, is that these guys were, they were like the soothsayers, the healers of the earth. And, the word healing, as we know, means to make whole, to return something to a state of wholeness. And this is why you see all of these megalithic sites all throughout the world. Some of them are absolutely incredible. My research has taken me out into the field to look at these and to see that, what on earth was going on here? That the bringing of lots of different stones, some of them huge, some of them very small, to a certain location, you see. A lot of this was done in a sort of a ritualistic way to mend or heal the earth itself, because they believed that, the gods had been angry, these cataclysms had taken place for a meaning, because in the life of a druid, everything had a meaning.
And, a druid, though, was generally a pretty good individual, right?
Yes, these were the elite. These were like, the senior enlightened ones. It's very much like philosopher kings, philosopher kings of Plato. These are the elect. And, of course, everything the Druids did was divided into three. So the Druidic order was actually really, truly divided into three. But, we don't want to go into that, all the details. I mean, it's in the book. But the main job, the real essence of these Druids was, they were keepers of wisdom. Yes, they were enlighteners of men. Yes, they had a worldwide network stretching as far as the Indus Valley. And even some people now are looking into the fact you know, that they may have even had colleges as far away as New Zealand and Australia. I mean, this thing is just amazing when you get into it. But their main priority was to heal the Earth through the working with the subtle energies of the Earth, through the high science of the Earth, like geomancy, you see. These individuals knew about these ancient sciences. They were the earliest studiers of anatomy on the face of the planet. You know, of course, they've been misrepresented to us, but these individuals were astronomers, navigators, mariners, the builders of some of the finest megalithic ancient sites. They were the enlighteners of the world. And they looked at the fact that their goddess had many names, of course. One of the names was Eri, and that's what Ireland is actually named after, is the goddess Eri, E-R-I. It's where we get our word Terra.
Okay.
You know, when we say Terra Firma,
sure,
or Terra for the Earth, that is actually, if you take away the T, you have Etta, and that is an old Gaelic word for the Earth goddess. And when they looked at her wounded, you can better believe that these people's first priority was the healing of the Earth. And if you could see Scandinavia and Ireland and England during, you know, the aftermath, the descriptions are absolutely catastrophic. In fact, did you know that the old story of hell and the old stories of Hades and the land of the underworld, or the land of the dead, the land of the decaying corpses, etc., a lot of the mythology surrounding the underworld or the dead actually refer to the lands of the West and the state of decay that they were in? Did you know that?
Yeah, you had mentioned that some time ago.
It's got a good memory.
Still doesn't mean that there's not evil out there or dimensions of evil, but
no.
But you're right. I mean, they could have taken these events and created these places for us.
Oh, they did. It's in Egyptian mythology. It's very much. Oh, believe me, you're right. They believed in a supernatural, or you know, an utter. They believed in hell also, in ways that we understand today. But they also had a physical component to it, that the lands of the Northwest were wrecked, and the animal death you see, and the fauna death, and the stench. And, I mean, the descriptions of Scotland are particularly, you know, harrowing. Not only the Storega tsunami we talked about, but, you know, previous deluges and utter, you know. And, you see, this is a substantiated because, you know, often on the west coast of Ireland, you know, when the sea, when they have a particularly violent storm or whatever,
oh, yeah,
you know, all sorts of weird, you know, ancient stuff comes up on the beaches. When the waves go very far out, people can see the remnants of these lost parts of Ireland, you see, that are now sunken beneath the waves.
Lots of history.
It's all right there beneath the waves.
Now, I always thought that the Greeks were so advanced, way beyond anybody. Now I'm not sure anymore.
Right. We got to, you know, it's not saying that, you know, in the historical times these people did not contribute to culture. Of course they did. But we're talking about, you know, the so latter days, you know, were people who've already digested so much knowledge from ancestors that have been suppressed, where, you know, the history has been manipulated to such an extent that we are made to see what we're, you know, supposed to see. The right hand moves and we don't see what the left is doing. There was a worldwide campaign, which is very, very old, about the destruction of the Druids. And one of the things that prompted me to really write the book, apart from everyone telling me to do it, is this idea that I'm sick and tired of reading about the genocide of the Druids as just a passing footnote in most other people's books. You know, it really started to irritate me that we have so much work on Cortez, you know, and the South American destructions. We got so much information on the destruction of the American Native American Indians of North America. We got so much destruction on, you know, maybe say Lenin, you know, and the Bolshevik Revolution and the Holocaust, all of that. And we've got all sorts of, you know, elaborations on all of these other things. And the first one in history is a mere passing footnote. And when you consider the magnitude of who died in that genocide, that story really needs to be told, and we need to start pointing out who the contingents were and what the loss to the human race is. Because as you asked me earlier on, you know, what about the you know, the present day, you know, ramifications of,
sure,
this? Well, you know, it wouldn't matter. Nothing we're talking about, nothing I've written would matter one single jot. It would just be an exercise in futility if it didn't happen that when the Druids were destroyed, their knowledge, their teachings, their ways, their techniques was appropriated by their destroyers and have been used against mankind ever since. The cities have so much Druidic symbolism in it. The royal courts of England are incredibly imbued, you see, with all sorts of Druidic motifs. Not that the motifs themselves are negative or the symbols are negative. It's that the people using them are now negative. They've been taken from the elders of mankind who were put to the sword in a mass holocaust. And their knowledge, their teachings are now being used against the human race.
What?
This is the tie-in to the modern time. This is the tie-in that people need to understand so they never for an instant forget that we're not talking about some dry ancient history here. We're talking about something that has imminent importance for this war on consciousness that's global today.
Why were they targeted for destruction, Michael? What were these power elite afraid of?
Well, great question. Simply their own destruction. It's impossible for any Leviathan of evil to exist while these children of light lived. So this is why it was an all-out campaign of genocide. And you see, here's the thing about colonization. Say you and I are going to colonize somebody, and we arrive on their land or their island, and we find out to our horror, or our agents are already telling us, that these boys that you're about to, you know, invade are infinitely, and I'm not talking about just a little bit, but infinitely more civilized than you are. So you and I, George, look around and go, Jesus, shit, these guys are more civilized than we are? Well, you know, we got two choices. We either pack up our bags and go, okay, well, then we'll leave you guys alone. Or you have the ego to think, well, then these guys have got to die because we're not going to be able to impose our satanic Leviathan on the world. We're not going to be able to put power in the place of love. You know, we're not going to be able to put up our evil institutions if these children of light who are educating the world are hanging around, because they're going to, you know, they're going to take care of us. These people have a lot of power as well. So the all-out genocide, and of course, once you understand that this was the case, that's why you have the all-out campaign of genocide, and it wasn't just a nice adaptation of one group to the next or a happy meeting. It was an all-out plan of disaster and slaughter, and I now believe with all of my heart that that story needs to be told, because it's in that ancient story that the roots of modern tyranny are to be found. You know, this is what my mentors like Jordan Maxwell have always been saying, and I believe it, and this book absolutely proves it.
You know, the more I got to know Jordan, and I've been to lunch with him, I bet at some conferences with him.
Yeah, we've done many together, all of us.
Exactly. I have begun to appreciate the fact that what he says is the absolute truth, and it is frightening. There was a time he was on our program, Michael, and his phone line got cut. I mean, I'm not talking about a normal, you know, there's a problem here. The phone line got cut. He couldn't talk to anybody for like 2 days.
Yeah.
Something, the people listen to him, they don't want him, and they're out to get him.
Well, you know, exactly. And that's why this show, Coast to Coast, and the viewers that are listening to us right now are a special group. And, you know, as I said in the beginning, my book, my work, all of my work, it's not for everybody. You know, I already understand that. I'm in no doubt about it, that this is for people who are now hungry for the truth because they're sick of the lies. They're the people who are tuning in to Coast to Coast to listen to the guest and this alternative history to find out what on earth has been going on, that this, you know, we're being shot at. You know, countries or nations are falling. We're being embroiled in something very dark and sinister. Our children, are their world, the world of tomorrow, is forfeit to these demagogues, and we have to start getting our hands around some very interesting, like Jordan has said, occult information, because there's an incredible conspiracy against truth that's happening in the world, and we're in the latter days. I'm not a pessimist about it, because I believe that, you know, before death, one thing is for sure, and growing up in Ireland taught me this, is things become very lucid. You're able to see things with incredible clarity when there's trauma, when there is, you know, some sort of death-like experience taking place, and it's in those final moments. You know, generals in the field know this, martial artists know this, that it's in those minutes just before something incredibly tragic takes place that you can switch things around, that you finally get the, you know, light, the flash of light to see what is going on, to turn the game around in those final moments. It's happened many times and it's going to happen again, and we're in a very precious and brilliant time. And so the more open-minded people are, the better. And that's basically the only people I have time to deal with. I don't have time to deal with people who want to make that choice and remain in ignorance or, you know, in the consensus trance. Not at all.
We'll take the occult information from you, Michael, right at the half point here. But I've got to ask you about the chief god of the Druids, because I have always heard, and this is what's fascinating, so I need to know if this was mythology or if this was a real creature, that it had horns. Is that true?
Oh, yeah, it does, and that opens up a whole ball of wax. Basically, his name was Herne, H-E-R-N-E. It's where we get the word Hermes.
Okay.
The Greeks,
picked up, yeah.
Yeah, they picked it up and became Hermes, who later became the Roman Mercury.
Isn't that interesting? Well,
long before Thoth, long before Mercury, long before Hermes, you have the forest god Herne. He's also called Cernunnos. And he had horns, you know, and the horns were of the stag, because one of the most important, if not the most important symbol, animal totem anyway, to the ancient Druids, was the stag god. So very important. In fact, they say that the word Saxon I believe the word Saxon, like Anglo-Saxon, may even derive from an early word meaning the stag men. So this symbol of the horned stag is very, very important. One of the reasons why they worship the deer or the stag, there's many reasons why they had it as sacred, is because when you see the face of the deer and the horns or the antlers, it looks like the fallopian tubes of the female.
Mm-hmm.
Which gives birth to the child of light. That's why you'll often see Horus or some of the gods in between horns, rising like the sun. So they understood that this weird shape of the horns of a bull or a deer or a stag looked like the female generative system. And since these were a matriarchal group of people, they worshipped the earth and they were essentially a matriarchy, it was one of the reasons why they worshipped this. Now, of course, later on, the horned god got demonized, sadly, and it became suppressed, this whole cult of the ancient gods,
Your research is fantastic into this, but also the work of the correlation between ancient Ireland and Egypt is fascinating as well. We've got a few minutes here before the break. Tell me about this relationship, the Egyptians. Where do they fit into this picture?
Well, this is, again, crucial to the book, and book two, which is called The Cult of Aton. Well, it's actually called Akhenaten, The Cult of Aton and the Dark Side of the Sun, goes into these connections between Egypt and Ireland because there has been a great suppression of that, not only a suppression of the true story about the destruction of the Druids and the Bards, but a great deal of suppression connecting Ireland to Egypt. Because remember, we're talking about a conspiracy here that wants us to believe that all the elements of civilization began in the East and then traveled westward. And nothing could be further from the truth. And to do that, you have to overemphasize the role of Egypt, and you have to make Egypt look absolutely unique. So the land of the Nile, you see, has been presented to us in a very distorted way. It's not that the place wasn't civilized. It very much was. But it was civilized by the Druids. It's just that in Egypt, they were not called Druids because a name is a name is a name, right? They have different names. The group that had ruled in Egypt for thousands and thousands of years were called the Amenists, like the word amen at the end of a prayer.
Yes.
A-M-E-N.
Yes.
Well, the Amenists were the Druids. The Amenists were the Egyptian version of the Druids. They were collaborators of the Irish-British Druids and had tremendous connections with them. And they were influenced in the most earliest pre-dynastic times by a very unique group of people called the Shamsu Hor, or the Disciples of Horus. These were actually the physical northwestern men of wisdom who had actually, their graves have actually been found. So we're not talking about some mythology here. The graves of the children of Horus, the Shamsu Hor, have been discovered in Upper Egypt. And these were people that Grafton Smith, the great archaeologist, absolutely declared in his book that these were the people who designed and built the pyramid. Absolutely. But they were Caucasian, blue-eyed Westerners.
That's bizarre.
So this has been suppressed, George. This is the thing that I want to, the book is, 1,100 pages, goes into this in great depth about the deep connections and the lies, the unbelievable barrage of lies that have been told about not only the occult history of the world, but the deep and abiding connections between the Egyptians, especially the pre-dynastic Egyptians, the Amenists, a group called the Atenists, who are, under Akhenaten, the famous pharaoh Akhenaten. Did you know that Akhenaten's daughter, is buried in Ireland?
I did not know that.
Did you know that the first king of the first dynasty of Egypt, this is their first official dynasty of Egypt, is buried in Northern Ireland?
Nope, I didn't know that either.
Oh, man, we can get into the whole ball of wax. The amount of dignitaries and connections to Egypt, mummified baboons have been, Barbary apes have been found in Northern Ireland. Mentions of ancient Irish sites have been found in Egyptian papyri. The amount of connections is unbelievable when you get into it.
Michael, when we come back, let's talk about the occult. I also want to talk about the myth of Noah, David, and Goliath. Get your take, because there is some talk that it perhaps might have originated in Irish mythology as well. Michael Tesserian's websites, he's got many. They're linked up at coasttocoastam.com right now. And we're talking about his latest work, The Irish Origins of Civilization. Back when we talk about the occult and some of these other myths on Coast to Coast AM. And I tell you what we'll do next hour. Let's open up the phone lines with Michael Tesserian and you. So we'll be back in a moment for that, but up next we'll talk about the occult, we'll talk about the myth or not of Noah, David, and Goliath, and where did it all originate. Michael, the occult, of course, as you and Jordan Maxwell mentioned, tell us a little bit about how the histories of the occult in Ireland and the Americas could be destroying us all.
Well, you know, people have noticed through the Washington, you know, the layout of the cities like Washington, like studying the symbols on the dollar bill, a lot of these machinations of the secret societies, now people are starting to get a handle on that such entities exist and that their symbolism is all around us. And thanks to the work of, you know, Eustace Mullins and G. Edward Griffin, you know, and Jordan and so many other people, a lot of people you've had on as guests, you know, the Mavericks, the people who went out there, when, you know, Bill Cooper, I mean, the people who've really delved deeply into this, and the journey has begun. You know, the journey has begun since those days of trying to find out who and what these people are, why they would want to be hidden, why they control the governments the way they do, etc. So, you know, my work is to kind of show their ancient roots and to explain more of their tyranny. But you see, when we look at all of these symbols that are proliferating, that the royal dynasties are using, we not only see a lot of Egyptian symbolism. I mean, after all, there's, you know, only like 21 Egyptian obelisks in the world. So tell me how, you know, 13 of them happen to be in Rome.
Good point.
You know what I mean? And you only have to take a trip down the Thames, or you only have to look at Washington, D.C. or St. Louis, and you start seeing all of the symbolism that people like myself study to realize that something's going on here. And as you start tracking this symbolism, you can get down a lot of false byways, and you can get into a lot of finger-pointing at groups and individuals, you see, who may not, in fact, be to blame. But as your study progresses, you know, you can make these kinds of errors and thinking, oh, well, it's this group or it's that group, and, you know, people can just say, oh, it's Masonic, or, oh, no, wait, it's Judaic, or, no, it's this, it's that, or the other. And, you know, we need to move on from that. We need to get a little less vague about it. It's not just Masonic. It's not just, you know, Knights Templar. You know, we've thrown these terms around. And my work is there to say, okay, we can do better than that. We can be much more specific so that when you see a term like New World Order, doesn't it imply what we've just been talking about in the last hour, you know, that there must have been an old world order that you don't know anything about?
That's right.
Doesn't it imply doesn't it imply pyramids? Doesn't it imply wastelands? Doesn't it imply a tyranny of control, of empire building, which is what you can see on these symbols, that no matter how where you go, all the civic, you know, centers of the world have the same architecture? Isn't that strange to people? That all the flags are the same tripartite symbol, or they have the, you know, the various stars on them? How come there's a Druidic hammer and sickle on the old communist flag? You see, how come there's Druidic oak leaves around the Oval Office in Washington? How come there's Druidic acorns on the hats of the American cavalry? You know, we got questions. You know, I mean, I've got a whole section on symbolism on the Irish Origins of Civilization site. So, in fact, if people want to go to IrishOriginsOfCivilization.com, they can actually see an appendices section, because, George, I chose, the book is already the 1,100 pages, two volumes, as you can see there. So I chose not to put the appendices in the book. The appendices is free online at the Irish Origins site. So, and the second thing about the appendices is that that's a lot of collaborative work that people have sent me for years from all around the world. That section will continue to grow. And so people who've got a piece of this from all over the world, you know, from Rio, from especially New Zealand and Australia, get a lot of stuff from Scandinavia. You know, people who are saying, hey, what about the symbols in my city? I'm seeing these lions. I'm seeing these crowns. I'm seeing all of this symbolism. Michael, you know, tell me about it. So all of these people who've sent me stuff, you know, it's on the site, the Irish Origins of Civilization. Just go to the appendices section, and you're going to see incredible stuff that we've amassed on this subject coming from this side of symbolism. So my work in the book, you see, is to show these hidden connections between countries that in official history books have almost no connection at all, like we said, Egypt and Ireland, but also to show that, as I said before, the knowledge of the greatest teachers, the greatest enlighteners in the world was taken. They were slaughtered in something that makes, you know, I mean, the Native American Indian genocide look paltry in comparison. And then, you know, this genocide is a footnote. And much more importantly, these druidic symbolistic tropes that you see in the royalty, you know, like the word mayor, you're familiar with the word mayor, and in England we have the word alderman.
Mm-hmm.
Alderman comes from alder, the wood of the alder tree. So when you see the man with the wand, you see, in the court, in the Queen of England, you're banging the stick three times, or you have all of these Masonic types of symbolism, what we have to understand is, to answer your question, that's where the Druidic knowledge is, George. The secret societies like the Freemasons, the Knights Templar, the Rosicrucians, the Illuminati have been the illegitimate preservers of the Druidic knowledge that their unworthy hands shouldn't be on. And they're using it for the destruction of Ireland, as they have done in the past, and for the destruction of the United States of America. These people are unworthy, blood-soaked tyrants who've appropriated an archive of knowledge in which they are completely unworthy desecrators, sanctimonious desecrators of an ancient canon of knowledge that should be serving all of mankind.
No,
and this story needs to be told about how these people appropriated this ancient canon, this ancient archive, and are using it on a global level all around the world. And these Masonic, you know, the symbols that you see on the Masonic institutions, and I'm not indicting all Masons. I'm not indicting all Masons.
You know,
here.
I'm glad you said that, because my question to you, and I don't want to interrupt you, was you'll get a lot of calls from Masons in this country, for example, who are unbelievable. They raise money for churches and hospitals. These people aren't on the tier that you're talking about.
Absolutely not. I am not talking about the, you know, philanthropist, speculative Masons who join from the street level. And I have many Mason people who collaborate with my work. You know, I'm not a Mason myself. I belong to no such fraternities, and I don't even endorse them. But I have respect for these people and the respect for their choice and the great work that they do in society.
All right, listen to what he said, everyone, okay? Just so you don't get confused.
No. This is not about sectarian, and certainly not about muckslinging on different groups. I've been invited by Masons to talk in their lodges to reinvigorate Masonry. Because nobody from within has the faintest idea what the ancient symbolism of their own institution means. So they've invited people like myself and Jordan, you see, and of course, for personal reasons, I will not have it, won't do it, but I understand they're on where they're at there. No, who I'm talking about are bloodline Masonic people from the highest degrees of the royal dynasties, from the people who are very elite already. They come from dynasties. They come from bloodline Masonic family lineages, and many of these lineages stretch back to the Sinclairs, you see, and to the Menzies of Scotland, and all the way through to the Habsburgs and the Hanoverans, the people that we deal with in the book, and some of these go back to the old Dragon Court, what is called the old Dragon bloodline, or the Brotherhood of the Snake, the Brotherhood of the Serpent, you see, who are these rivals, who people I refer to in the book as the sorcerers versus the magicians of the world. And, you know, we're now being called, you see, again, into those battle lines, you know, and these cut across normal divisions of, you know, religion and normal divisions of caste and class. Because in ancient Druidic times, race didn't exist. Race did not matter at all. It was understood then, as it should be understood now, and sadly is not understood now, that good men come from all races and evil men come from all races.
Absolutely.
No race is superior to another. So the misuse of words, you see, like Druid and Aryan, we go into the word Aryan in the book and clear that up, because the misusers of these words are the stealers, the rapers, the plagiarists of an ancient canon that they have no right to be manipulating on the world. But the thing is that that's their job. The job of empire builders is to destroy you and then attack your language, attack your customs, attack your culture. And this ancient stuff that we're talking about happening in Ireland is happening right now in America, where the customs and the morals and the virtues of this of America are being attacked, as my country has been attacked. And so the deep and abiding symbols, when you see that, you know, Ulstermen from Northern Ireland, did you know that your first six presidents of Ireland had blood going back to the Scots-Irish?
I didn't know that.
Directly, Adams and all of your
all
original
six
presidents.
Of them. Okay.
Yeah. Some of them even came off the boat from there. They were first-generation Irish. Scots-Irish. The symbols of the Northern Irish people are on the American Constitution. They're there. The Ulstermen, you know, fought for the War of Independence. But the fact of the matter is, America's famous for losing the wars it wins. We have to refight the War of Independence against the real enemies of America. And I know who they are and where they sit. And this book is to expose their inner steering committee, not just the lackeys at the bottom of the pyramid.
Can we beat them?
Absolutely, because you know something? By being evil, you're already marked for destruction. I have pity on these people. I say it in the book, that I have pity on the choices that these people have chosen, because they can't win, and all our job is to dig the graves into which they will eventually fall. Because if you go against nature's ordinance, if you go against the truth, and if you're a Christian, if you go, as they would say, if you go against God's law, then you are already marked for death by the fact that you are in such a state of ignorance and debauchery. You are already marked for death by being on the side of the darkness.
Michael, Noah, David, Goliath, are they myths?
Yeah.
Are they real?
Fantastic, isn't it? These are stories. Can you believe they turn up?
You there, Michael?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, there you are. You kind of faded out on us for a bit. Go ahead.
Sorry about that. Yeah, absolutely. These are just a few anecdotes from, you know, Christian lore, Christian lore and certainly the Bible is proliferate with ancient Druidic motifs. That doesn't invalidate the Bible. It's just a statement of a fact that many of the story of Jesus on the Mount, the Sermon on the Mount, the Mound, well, the Mound was a central motif to ancient Druids, the building of the famous Mound, you see. The Sermon on the Mount, the Olives, the Hill of Olives, you know, we've got lots of motifs. And one of the most important ones from the Old Testament is the story of Noah. Noah is based on an old Gaelic king called Nua, who survived these cataclysms we've been talking about. And guess what he did? Nua, in Irish mythology, brings his people in several ships. He saves them because he builds these ships.
Right.
And he leaves Atlantis, he leaves the four broken islands, and lands safely on Ireland. The High King of the Gaels of Ireland. His name was Nada, but in English it's pronounced Nua.
And he had the ships, and he fought the huge floods.
That's right, and saved his people.
Yeah.
And you know, had a connection with God and was warned and was a great king and had all these mystical powers, etc. And then his sidekick was this what's known in Gaelic mythology as the Sun King. His name was Lu, for people who are interested. But the story of Lu, when they get to Ireland, they have to involve themselves in several wars with demonic, what the myths describe as demonic beings. And the Sun King Lu, the young boy, has to come out and fight a giant, a great king of evil called Balor of the Evil Eye. And the weapon that Lu, the Gaelic-Irish king of light, comes is a sling.
All right, that's like David and Goliath.
Right, and the whole story is right there in ancient Irish mythology. There's just two examples. In fact, it's even rumored in the Bible that the Philistines, the very famous group called the Philistines in the Bible, may in fact be connected to the Irish, that another name for the Irish in the East was the Philistines, you know, connecting to also the Phoenicians and the Cretans. So we have a whole incredible story here, and it's very fascinating how many, you know, even the burning bush motif of Moses meeting God at a burning bush. This is a very powerful Druidic idea of the bush and the burning tree. It's a symbol that actually predates Judaism and goes back to the old cult of the trees, and the idea of the tree being an oracle or the tree of life, you know, which you find in Scandinavian mythology and all over Irish mythology.
Announcements. You had a few. Go ahead.
Thanks. Well, one of them is about our event that's coming up. I just wanted to reaffirm. I don't know if you've mentioned it before.
I haven't even started yet, but you can.
Yeah, Psychic Spectrum Expo. You're headlining, of course. And Richard will be there, Richard Hoagland, and Danian Brinkley and myself and several other speakers. That's going to be the Psychic Spectrum Expo, you know, up in Seattle. These are good friends of mine. That's why I'm making the announcement, because these are personal friends of mine. These are people that have really supported my work in the Northwest, made my life very easy up there with classes and, you know, events. Skip and Sharon, you know, deserve a great applause
for the
work that they're doing.
We haven't put that information yet on our website. Have you put it up on yours yet?
Yeah, and it's who are interested to come up there and meet us all, psychicspectrum.com, and the phone number is 253-941-3355. That's 253-941-3355. It's going to be a great event, and it's also very professionally run. Skip and Sharon have taken over the job of these expos in the Northwest, which lapsed for several years, and they're doing an absolutely marvelous professional job, and I'm proud to be part of it and be invited, and you'll be there. We'll be able to meet up again and talk.
It's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely great. And the second announcement is just we're doing a deal. So anybody who purchases the Irish Origins of Civilization book, and they can do that by going to irishoriginsofcivilization.com or just go to michaeltessarian.com and you'll see the link through there. If you buy a book, there's a deal that we have with my Time Gnosis site, the numerology site that I have.
All right. And when you say a book, is it volume one or volume two or both?
Oh, they come as a set.
Okay, good. All right.
You can't buy them separately. You have to buy them as one set. If you buy a book online, and you can only buy it by credit card online, when you do so, you will be sent, you know, the obligatory confirmation email. I want people to keep that email, because if you're interested in signing up for Time Gnosis, which is my site on numerology, you're going to get a deal when you keep that. We got a deal for you when you keep that particular email confirmation. So if you buy the Atlantis book, because we're on Coast to Coast, it's a special deal, or you purchase the Irish Origins, you will get a free 30-day trial subscription to Time Gnosis. And you'll also get the second year of your membership free. So this is the perfect time to sign up to find out about the power of numerology. And when you buy your book, then you can actually just go over to timegnosis.com. That's timegnosis.com with the G, Time Gnosis, and click to sign up. And when you sign up, you know, you'll be shown what to do. And then what, if you want, you can forward that email that you get from the book site when you buy the book. That email confirmation, you must keep it because you're not going to be valid if you don't have that. Then you can send that to me at michael@timenosis.com. Just forward that email proving that you bought a book, and we'll set you up with the big deal, you know, on the Time Gnosis site. You get a free trial period, and then your second year is absolutely free, you know. So it's a really one opportunity there that we're giving to people.
Well, Michael, great work. We've still got a few more moments here before the top of the hour, but we're going to open up the phone lines next hour for people who have an opportunity to chat with you. All the things you've done have been good. I've got to ask you this, too, because in your book, Atlantis, Alien Visitation and Genetic Manipulation, you truly believe we've been visited, don't you?
Absolutely. And I don't think there can really be any doubt about it, you know. I really don't think that. And it's not, even since my book has been written, you know, we've had now new information about the DNA.
Yes.
Of being off-world. We have, you know, more discoveries about celestial cataclysms that, you know, hurt the fauna down here. We've discovered more. So we're in an age of awakening in which it's every, there's not a day now goes by without new discoveries, you know, proving that our planet is not what we've been told officially in the history books, and that there was thousands of, man lived on the Indus Valley. He lived in Ireland, as we've been discussing in this program. Armenia is one of the oldest civilizations in the world. It bears great similarities to the Celtic. So we got new discoveries about Peru recently and about the role of women in Inca society. You know, it's a fantastic time to be alive in which we're discovering a great deal about this. And one of the most controversial things is that our history has been affected or disaffected, whatever way you want to look at it, by the people that I refer to as the sorcerers, whose own bloodline goes back to the people that, the Bible talks about as the Nephilim or the fallen angels. And that's what the first book, Atlantis, goes into, because this coming of evil into the world, you know, is not by chance. It's not a glitch of Mother Nature. It was a serious violation of our sovereignty. It was one of, it's the first one. It caused, it's one of the things that caused the traumatization of the human being. And it's basically changed the world's history from those remote periods. We're living in the legacy of something, you see, that happened in ages past. And we're in the, almost, in the, according to the Maya prophecies, we're in the fulfillment phase of these ancient happenings. So we're living right there, you know, 2 minutes to midnight. It's time for the human race to wake up and get it. But as I said, at the beginning, you know, it's okay if you make that choice to remain in ignorance, because, as you know, ignorance is bliss.
Ignorance is bliss, Michael. Your work, has it ever gotten to the point where you felt threatened? I know Jordan does.
No, I'm not threatened. I have no fear, because I pity these people. They cannot stand. They can stand up against me and they can take care of me, but they cannot take care of the spirit of truth which I serve. I love my country's history. I don't love what the Irish people have become or what they've been doing to each other, because they've been mind-controlled to bicker and fight and murder one another, which is internecine fights and battles that the world, as you see, you know, wall-to-wall in. We have to put down all of these battle axes and realize who's really been calling the shots, who's shining that beacon of light down on the human race, you see. So we need to now focus on the real enemy, the real virus in the system. And this is what my world is my work and my life is dedicated to. And I have absolutely no fear of what they, because they can't ultimately harm me. They can kill my body, but they cannot kill my spirit, my passion for the work that I do, my love for the human race, and my love for the spirit of humanity that I know will one day be born in this planet.
All right.
When you see evil of this dimension, you can't prevaricate. You must instantly act. You know, when your house is burning, you act. You don't think of anything else.
And I'm feeling the shift, too, Michael. I'm feeling the fact that so many people are now becoming more aware of what we're talking about than ever before. Phone lines are open. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM.